Hello and welcome to the Black Spectrum, the place where our black and brown communities talk openly and sometimes anonymously about all topics to do with mental health and neurodiversity. I'm your host, Diane Laidlaw, and this is episode 5.
So I'm 33 and I'm mixed race. My mum is white British and my dad is Grenadian Caribbean.
Okay. And what diagnosis do you have?
So I have a diagnosis of Asperger's syndrome, but that term isn't used anymore, I don't think, for the past year. So it is, it's ASD, autistic spectrum disorder, along with adult ADHD and OCD.
And when did you get your diagnosis?
I was 21, my third year of uni.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So yeah, pretty stressful time, but it also came at a good time in that it made a lot of sense.
Yeah, I was talking to somebody actually last week who also said that a lot of people seem to be getting a diagnosis when they go into uni, which is quite, I guess that's where you see your symptoms more, I guess, or your traits more when you're under extreme pressure and have to perform in a certain way, I guess.
Definitely like that. I mean, I was talking to my partner about it earlier and I said to him, when do you think I'll realise that I perhaps needed to see someone about this? And I may have told you before, but my younger sister is autistic. I'd say she's quite like moderately to severely autistic with learning difficulties. So I grew up in a household where it was just, everything was just mad. So my behaviour probably didn't seem that out of the ordinary in my household growing up. But once I got home and moved in with my partner, there were certain traits that were coming through that I just thought, okay, this isn't, you know, normal, quotation marks, maybe I should see someone. And I spoke to my GP and he was very good about it. He got the ball rolling about me seeing a specialist, and yeah, kind of took it from there. I think it's about 2 years from initially going to my doctor, 18 months maybe, but from initially seeing my doctor to getting a diagnosis.
Okay, so that's quite quick then. What area do you live in? Do you live in England or?
I live in Brighton.
Okay, so looking back at your childhood, I mean, with hindsight, you know now that you're autistic, are you able to kind of connect the dots to how your behaviour was as a child?
So many things. So taking things literally, I never used to get idioms and figures of speech. I can remember once, so I was a bit of a geek at school, like I was a high achiever, always did well, I never got into trouble for anything. And one of the teachers came up to me and went to see, what time do you make it? And I just stood there and I was panicking because I was like, is this a trick question? What are you asking me? And then I went, how do you make time? And he just went, get out. I was like, what? And then obviously as I grew older, I realized, oh, he was just asking me the time. But the way he phrased it, that seemed like a ridiculous way of asking me what time it was. There was a lot of that kind of thing when I was growing up. I didn't really fit in. I found myself, and what I know is now to be masking, is I'd just try and copy the most confident person in the room or try and act like how other people were acting to try and fit in. I'd see how other people would interact with each other and I'd think, okay, so I need to act like this in order to get friends, that sort of thing. So there was a lot of that. I feel like, especially during my teenage years, it's almost like I didn't have my own personality because I was trying so hard to fit in with other people and be like others. I would copy other people's mannerisms and the way they were, even if it was like negative mannerisms that I would see it at the time, but my mum would notice that I'd be behaving a certain way or I'd have a certain attitude. And it wasn't really my personality, it's me trying to act like somebody else. So there's a lot of that. It's really exhausting, really interested. I've got a very narrow interest in things, and the things that I am interested in, I have a extreme knowledge. I have to know absolutely everything. Growing up, I was obsessed with like ancient Egypt.
Oh wow.
And I knew everything and anything about ancient Egypt history, and that's something I think I'm going to try and pick up again as I'm getting older and I've got a bit more time on my hands. But really narrowly into that, and music, basically they were my two main things. I just learned something until I have an encyclopedic knowledge of it.
Wow.
So yeah, quite narrow but quite deep. So that sort of thing when I was growing up.
Did you ever mask a lot at home, or was it mainly at school when you was around your friends?
Mainly at school, around friends and around other people. Not so much at home. I mean, maybe to a certain degree, but no, I'd say not so much, because obviously my younger sister, she's on the spectrum. Mm. She'd be the same kind of way, like she'd act a different way at school and then worse at home, but she's got what you'd call classic autism. So I mean, when she was diagnosed, she went to a special school and she was the only girl in her class.
Oh, she might have
been the only girl in her year. So she was born in 1991, so, and she was diagnosed when she was two, and autism was literally unheard of, especially in girls. With my sister, if you meet her, you'd be like, okay, yeah, there's something different about her. She's on the spectrum. She can't really hide the way she is, whereas I'm probably an expert at it.
So your sister was displaying more, I guess, extreme traits, which enabled your parents to go and have to, like, say, let's get her tested at two, because two's quite young.
Yeah. So what it was, I mean, she was developing normally. I mean, I always remember my mum saying that my sister didn't cry as a baby at all. She just didn't cry, whereas I cried a lot. I'm not sure whether this is still correct now, but a lot of children with autism, and especially like some more severe symptoms, they'll develop as normal and then gets to the age of around two and they stop speaking, or they just stop. Their development is very different. So my sister, I think she started to go to preschool or nursery, and she just stopped interacting with other children, and she just wanted to play on her own, and she stopped talking. So my parents were obviously like, there's something wrong here. We need to get her tested out.
Okay. And your mum didn't recognise any traits that you might have from your sister?
Yeah. So when I went around to getting diagnosed, I think the psychiatrist that was diagnosing me wanted to speak to my partner in private and also my parents. So we spoke to my mum, and my mum said to me after I had the diagnosis, she said, I always knew, but at the time I was able to lead like a normal life. I was doing well at school.
Yeah.
I just kind of like coasted along undetected. Whereas with my sister, it was so obvious. But she said when we were growing up, it was really, really difficult managing us both, because my sister was like one extreme and I was the other. And we'd often but some of our symptoms were essentially the same.
Interesting. So what was your excuses for your behaviours and for your traits before you realised that you was autistic? What did you think of your own behaviours?
I think I just thought I was a bit weird. When I was originally getting tested, I saw one doctor first and I explained my family history and my behaviours and the way I am, and he just said, I think you're just a bit quirky. And I thought, hey, you're dismissing me. Like, I do want to get another opinion on this, because I just know deep down that I know that I'm on the spectrum. I just feel it.
Yeah.
But with me, you know, when I was a kid, I was very like alternative and, you know, acted differently to like most kids. And I just thought that was, I'm a geek, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I was definitely like a nerd at school. I'd flit around from different groups. I wasn't popular or anything like that, but I'd flit around through different friendship groups, and I was always like the weird one. But when I was in year nine or whatever, I'd be doing work for college students, and I'd get ridiculed for that by like my classmates, but my friendship group were always a couple years younger. So I always had like this weird view of myself. I couldn't really like picture where I fit in. I mean, even now, my friendship group, they're all younger than me. So yeah, I mean, when I got diagnosed, it was kind of a bit like, oh, a sigh of relief, because I can understand why I'm behaving this way and so many things have just kind of fit together. Then also kind of went through a bit of a phase of denial, because I thought about my sister and I think about, you know, her life. She still lives with my parents. She's unable to lead what you'd say, you know, a normal life. She'll never hold down a job or a full-time job and be able to live independently. And I thought, well, I'm not like that. And if I speak to other people and explain to them that I've got autism, they're going to immediately think that I'm like that. I went through a whole load of like, I'm not like that for a couple of years. And it was quite negative. So when I did tell people, and I think I mentioned this to you before, I'd tell people about my diagnosis and people were straight up to my face and say, no, you're not, you haven't got autism. My mum works with kids with special needs and you're not like that. Or you're really good at making eye contact, and so you can't be autistic. So I just stopped telling people, just kept it quiet. And it's only recently, I'd say the past 5 or 6 years, that I felt comfortable enough. I've got a really solid friendship group where I feel I can just let my hair down and fully be myself, like without masking. But it's taken a long time to get to this point, and I still do mask a lot in certain situations, but it's taken me quite a while until now to kind of like get to a point where I feel comfortable in my own skin.
So how do you unmask? How do you find yourself?
This is it. It's taken a lot of unpicking. For me, masking became second nature because I've been doing it for as long as I can remember. Every stage of my life, I can remember thinking, I need to maybe act like this way so I'll be accepted in this friendship group. Or if I act like this, maybe teachers will talk to me differently. Like, I've automatically done it without thinking for so long that learning to undo that was a real, like, it's an ongoing process, but I'm working on it. I mean, when not long after I got diagnosed, I've always had like anxiety growing up, but I fell into a bit of depression after I finished university. That whole thing of where, you know, oh, what am I doing with my life? I don't know what I'm doing. Worked in a job that I wasn't very happy with. I was still kind of like finding my feet after the diagnosis, and I ended up on medication, Telegram. And initially I was just on a very low dosage, and it just took the edge off. But then every time I saw the GP, if I wasn't feeling great, he just up the dose. And I ended up being about 40 milligrams for about 6 years. And it was towards the end of the 6 years that I like became really good friends with my current friendship group. And I'd take tablets and go out, and I just feel like I couldn't be myself. Like, I felt like the medication was stopping me from being myself. And if I ever skipped a dose, my friends would notice that I'd be a bit more animated and a bit more like bubbly. Whereas to me, the way I was growing up, and the way other people had treated me, I used to think that behaviour was weird.
Right.
My friends would be like, oh yeah, you can tell you haven't taken your tablet today, you're acting really like, you know, you're being really funny, and you know, you're just acting really differently. But they didn't say it was a bad thing. So I thought, okay, maybe this medication is kind of like stifling who I am and my personality. And I think it was dampening my personality to the point where, I didn't really feel like I knew who I was. So I weaned off it, and that's when I became like, oh, okay, I don't need to mask as much so more. And I've kind of just been unpicking it ever since. But still in certain situations, I still do it without thinking. It really depends on who I'm around and who I feel comfortable with.
When you went to school, because I know when I went to school, we did not have any children that were either physically disabled or had any neurological issues. They were all literally sent off to special schools. Didn't even matter like what part of the spectrum they were probably on, they would be sent to special schools. Now I have a son and he's 10, and we're waiting to get him diagnosed for autism as well. And he's just recently got diagnosed with ADHD too. And I was able to have a conversation with him about autism and about ADHD. And he was really like, he was cool with it. And the reason why he was cool with it was because he's now got children in his class with autism. And some of them, and it doesn't even matter what end of the spectrum they're on, they're all in his class. And I thought, this is probably where the normalization is starting to happen. Children are being integrated into the schools, and there's teachers that are in the schools that are helping them, and they're setting up like sensory classes in schools, you know. I'm so happy about that.
I think that's fantastic. I mean, when my sister was diagnosed, the only option was to send her to a special school, but the special school she went to, a lot of the children that she was with had severe disabilities, like really, really severe, in wheelchairs, unable to speak, talk. And even when I was a kid, I used to think to myself, is that the environment that she should be in? I don't know whether it's the best. And then when she got to a little bit older, she went to a different school that was further out, and it was a special school, but there was kids that were just naughty, that had been excluded, people that had been sent from a pupil referral unit. There would be a few autistic kids, maybe a couple with Down syndrome, but it was a real mixed bag. And I always think, you know, I wonder if she'd have gone to a mainstream school, whether things would have been different. Because I have, my niece is autistic as well. So like, there's a load of us in the family. My niece, she is 19. So a little bit younger than my sister. But when she got diagnosed, my older sister chose to send her to a mainstream school. And her life is very different to that of my sister's. I mean, still essentially they're on similar ends of the spectrum. They have similar issues, but her life, she's going to be able to integrate into society a lot more easier mm-hmm. than my sister. She's just turned 19. She's just passed mm-hmm. a driving test. And I always think, oh, you know, I wonder what would have become of my sister had she gone to a, you know, a different school, or, you know, if things were different. So yeah, I think that's an interesting one. I mean, certainly when I was at school, if you were slightly different, you weren't in a mainstream school. Yeah, it does seem like it just depends on the school. And if you're lucky enough to have a school that's got a great, you know, special educational needs department, and they've got the then great. If not, then some kids are packed up off to a special school. And I think in my sister's case, I think maybe a special school was the right way to go, but because there was such a broad mix of children with differing needs, I don't think that she probably got the attention that she, like the specialist attention that she required.
So going back to your diagnosis, how did you feel your treatment was from the NHS? Did you feel comfortable with how they handled you?
Partially, yes. I mean, with my GP was fantastic, but then the first specialist I saw, he was really dismissive. He just said, you know, you're just quirky. You just, you know, you're a bit, you're just eccentric. There's nothing wrong with you, sort of thing. And I just thought, well, I'm not looking to be told that there's something wrong with me, but I think that I'm on the spectrum. So he sent me for a second opinion, and the second person that I spoke to, the psychiatrist, he was just great. Like, it was over a few different appointments, I think like five in total. I'd go back, I'd get interviewed, had to discuss my family history before I got the official diagnosis. He said, without a doubt, like, you have got Asperger's syndrome. So that was fine. But yeah, when I saw the first specialist that was really dismissive, it kind of made me feel like, am I a hypochondriac? Am I mad? Am I looking for something that isn't there, but I know that is? So it kind of affected me personally for a little while, because I just thought, am I wasting NHS time? Like, what? I felt really bad. The way the doctor was with me, it made me feel like I was just wasting his time. But I'm glad that I pursued it, because eventually the person that I did speak to, he was just like, you know, the questionnaire that I had to take, I just scored, it was like almost 100%. And then, I mean, he spoke to my family, he got more family background, he spoke to my partner, he was brilliant. This is like, what, 12 years ago? So the NHS was in a bit of a different state to what it is now. And that particular GP at the time was fantastic. I was really surprised at the speed of things, because I thought at the time that 18 months was a long time, but hearing from people now that it's taking years and years. So I mean, I was quite lucky in that respect.
When you did get your diagnosis, did they offer you any support? Did you go looking for support groups? Did you educate yourself more about what autism was?
So I got my diagnosis, and then I was just given a leaflet and was told, these are support groups in your area. And that was it. It's just like, you've got your diagnosis, you're on your way. And I kind of felt a little bit lost. I thought, do I want to go to these support groups? I think I went to one, and it was just full of, no one looked like me, put it that way. No one, and I just thought, I can't relate to any of this, really. Like, I'm not finding this very helpful. It was mostly white men that were older. I don't know, I just didn't feel like I quite fit in. So I kind of just got on with it and just did my own thing. And I have been pretty much ever since. I mean, I remember when I was a child, my mum got quite involved with the Autistic Society, National Autistic Society, for advice and stuff with my little sister. So I thought, okay, I'll contact them. And I thought, you know, I'm good at speaking to people. I contacted them saying, you know, perhaps I could be an advocate for the National Autistic Society. As a, you know, as a mixed race female, I don't feel represented as a autistic person. Is there anything I can do? And I never heard back. I contacted them twice, and I just thought, okay, great. Like, you're not interested. It was really, really, really disappointing. And I found that, like, up until very recently, trying to find and network with people like myself, on the spectrum, it's been very difficult. It doesn't seem like there's much out there, females to start with, and, you know, female identifying people, there's nothing there. Everything is very male centric. I mean, even when I was a kid, looking back at my little sister, I got given a siblings book, something along the lines of, you know, you've got an autistic sibling. This is how you deal with things. It's kind of like an advice kind of book for people that have got autistic members of their family. And it was all the case studies were on boys. Everything was about boys. Everything was white boys. And still now, like, if you ask someone about autism, the immediate picture that springs to a lot of people's mind is just like, you know, a white boy. Even now, like, I think it's difficult for girls to get diagnosed, because even most of the diagnostic criteria was set and designed around boys. So yeah, I don't know, I just find it's difficult. The support groups that I was given, I just thought, this isn't for me. This isn't me. This isn't what I'm about. So I'm just going to leave it.
That's interesting. I think with social media and everything like that, it just makes it so much easier for us to find our own support groups now. I found most of my best support has been just through me going on Facebook, looking at those groups, or going on Twitter and finding my tribe on Twitter. I go to two support groups. One is for parenting, and I go to another one, which is called ADHD Babes. And that's an online one, actually. And that's all Black women on a Wednesday. And it's women who have been diagnosed and women who haven't. What's been beautiful recently is on Twitter, because it's ADHD Awareness Month, there's been lots of females talking, Black females talking about feeling that they may either be autistic or have ADHD, and trying to find the help for that, you know, trying to also come to terms with it with them within themselves, because in their minds, like you said, they picture it as the white boy. And for me, when I heard about ADHD, I'm thinking of the white kid running up and down the shopping aisles going crazy. I'm not thinking about inattentiveness and, you know, executive function and emotional dysregulation. I'm not thinking of any of that, because I've got such a limited view about what I thought ADHD was.
I was somewhere a few months ago, and I was with a couple of friends, and then acquaintances, like friends of a friend. Somehow the conversation of autism came up, and they all started saying, well, I know autism to be like this. I've got a second cousin that's autistic, and she does this and she does that. And I was getting a bit like hot under the collar, like feeling really awkward. So I said, well, I'm autistic. And they were like, what? You don't act it. But then they proceeded to talk about me as if I wasn't there, and about autism. And I was like, this is your idea or your experience. You've met one family member with autism, and you're basing your opinion of me on that. And, you know, you've met one person with autism. That's one person with autism. Like, we're all completely different. And I find that happens a lot. Like, I'll explain to someone that I'm on the spectrum, and then they'll be like, oh, right, yeah, so you're like this, and do you do this, and do you do that? And it's like the whole thing with how everyone back in the 90s thought autism meant Rain Man 20 odd years ago. It's the kind of thing now, like, it's more well known, but people think they associate it with, you know, the white boy running around going crazy. Yeah, I mean, the more we talk about it, and the more, you know, we spread the word and just put ourselves out there, the more people will learn about it.
And we have to make sure as well that we educate ourselves on what we have, because it is difficult being in those situations where our friends are like, well, you know, well, you don't look like that. And, well, I sometimes forget things. And it's like, well, you're like, yeah, okay. But, you know, it's different for me. And trying to explain that to people can be quite difficult if you're still trying to understand what you're going through. So I found when I found out like fully what ADHD was, and took the white boy running around Sainsbury's out of my brain. I had to be my own advocate. I had to stand up and be like, well, no, this is what I couldn't have anybody tell me what it was, or what it was that I was suffering with, or what I wasn't suffering with. I had to like be my own cheerleader a lot. So I had to educate myself, and I had to educate myself on my son as well, because he's got it. And I had to explain to family members, you know, you can't do that around him because he's got sensory issues, or you can't do this, or, you know, I had to be his bodyguard, per se.
Definitely got to that point. I mean, like I said earlier, you know, the early years after the diagnosis, when I finally felt comfortable telling people, to be then dismissed, you know, well, my cousin is a neurologist and he says that autism is this, therefore you can't be autistic. And people telling me to my face that, you know, I couldn't possibly be autistic because of, you know, X, Y, and Z. It's nice to be able to, you know, recently find a network of people, find my tribe, so to speak, and other people that are going through the same things that I am, and just open up a wider discussion and break down those stereotypes that people have about autism.
For the 21-year-old out there who feels a little bit different, who feels that they have been struggling, who feels that they may have been masking, what would your advice be for them?
I think it would be to pluck up the courage and speak to someone, because it took me from the moment where I thought, okay, there's something going on here, it was a good year before I felt confident enough to speak to a GP and to speak to a specialist. So, I mean, I was really, really nervous about it, but I just wrote everything down about how I was feeling and spoke to my GP, and he turned out to be very understanding. But if you get pushed back or dismissed, don't let that stop you. Because I think a part of me, after I was knocked back the first time, I just kind of wanted to give up. I thought I was just wasting everyone's time. But there was something inside me that thought, no, you need to pursue this. You need to carry on with this. And I'm glad that I did, because, you know, I got my diagnosis. It helped me make sense of a hell of a lot of things and helped me come to terms with who I am and grow as a person. So, yeah, I think, you know, if you think that you might be on the spectrum or you might have ADHD or there's something there, then you need to pursue it so you can get the help that you need, you know, whether it's at university, work, support. Yeah, you need to continue and push on with it.
If you are struggling with your mental health, please visit theblackspectrum.com to view resources and links that may help. Thank you for listening.